Hi friends, welcome to another episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host Chantel, and tonight I have my Thai delight with me. It is our Marie Rose.
Hello everybody, hope everyone's having a great day.
Heck yeah, hello Marie Rose. Tonight we're chucking gurneys and running for the exits. What in the haunting are we talking about? Why Haunted Hospitals Part 2, of course. But before we do, big thanks to everyone that's hanging with me on social media, everyone rating, subscribing, reviewing, emailing, and everything in between. Hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, on email at themediamatters@gmail.com, and via REMPod or phone app or whatever, because we're always haunted and haunting. It was a dark and stormy night, and I kept on reading and reading and reading your ghost stories. That's right, you guys. All you have to do to get me to read your story is send it. That's right. It's that easy.
Yeah. Easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's right. So jot that little baby down and email it to me at themediamatters@gmail.com. Send it via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or just call. That's right, my lovelies. You can leave it on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118 to be part of the action. For your written ghost stories, I will personally read and reply to your message and contact you to make arrangements for you to tell your real life ghost story or stories right here on The Media Matters. No pressure to be on the show. We can read your story on your behalf if you prefer. It's just good, clean, scary fun. No judgment, no pressure. For your voicemail ghost stories, you can call the show again at 850-203-0118. Make sure you leave your name, the state you're calling from, and let the ghost story roll. These messages will be played on the air, so make sure you let us know if you prefer to keep it quiet. Not quiet, private. Mm-hmm. You can also call us and leave a message with a review for the show, show-related questions, stories, and more. So make sure you stretch first and get that dialing finger ready to go. Do you guys want exclusive goodies like bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes vlogs, and more at your little fingertips? Make sure you join our super kick-ass, super exclusive family on Patreon and get immediate access to all the fun for as little as $1 every single month. What does as little as $1 per month mean for the show? It allows me to pay for monthly subscriptions that keep the show running, buy better equipment so you don't have to hear static and all kinds of background noise, and do really cool things for you guys like shows, live shows, meet and greets, and so much more. Check out The Media Matters on Patreon at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today. Let your voice be heard. Post your ratings and reviews for your favorite shows anywhere you listen to your podcasts. The couple of minutes it takes to leave a few words or even 5 stars really does make a huge difference. It helps podcasts move up the charts and become more visible for newcomers to see. So if you haven't done so already, please make sure you leave a rating and a review for your favorite podcasts and make sure your faves get seen. Without further ado, we have this week's Tarot Talk, which is brought to us by our Thai delight, the Marie Rose. Marie Rose, take it away.
Thank you, my dear. So the card that was drawn for this podcast was the Chariot. It's the 7th card in the Major Arcana, and it's a gentleman on a chariot, and in front of the chariot are 2 sphinxes, and this guy is pretty decked out. I'm showing the card to Chantel.
Ooh, yeah.
And typically, this card represents triumph and success and you know, getting better physically, as well as beating out money difficulties and so on and so forth. However, for today, guess what?
That bad boy is reversed. That's is it?
Right. It was drawn reversed, dadgummit. So this typically represents the possibility of ill health coming on, restlessness, wanting a change. It doesn't make me happy.
Nor me.
So, and unless you're just wanting a change,
yeah,
then I can see it. But I don't see any winning here. Mm. So
I don't think I like that, Marie Rose.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of yellow and blue in this card. Yellow, you know, related to your solar plexus, you know, inner strength, and so on and so forth. But with it being reversed, it's like your inner strength is kind of weakened, which makes me sad.
That's the second card we've had in 2 weeks that's reversed.
I know.
I don't like it.
No. We need to do some clearing out.
We need to do something.
Yeah, something's blocked. We got some blockages going on over here. We need cleared out. Going on. We have a lot of blockages going on.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
I need to do a sweep of my house. Not a sweep. A full-blown cleaning, a clearing, because,
yeah. I will in the next coming weeks. Mm-hmm.
I will too, for sure. There is some aggressive energy where, like, I've been startled a couple of times in the last, like, few days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I just knew somebody was standing right over my shoulder.
Oh.
And I, like, whipped my head around. But it was, like, that nervous whip, like, somebody sneaks up on you, like, they're mm-hmm. trying to scare you. And I'm like...
And there's nothing there?
No, or no one else in the house. It's just me and the dragons. I'm like,
yeah, you definitely need a house clearing. Yes. I haven't had that. Actually, I've been pretty lucky. I was just thinking about it yesterday. You know, I left work and I was kind of frustrated and just overall frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home and it was just like a switch went off. And I've just felt light and airy and just, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, my house, positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I love mm-hmm. my house.
But yeah.
I just need to clear my office.
Well, I need to, yeah, that for sure. But I think I just need to do a clearing. Like, the energy feels really good. It's so chill and peaceful. But
you think there's something there?
I think there are constantly energies like on the move.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that someone's like lingering or someone's are lingering. It could be like people passing through.
You know what I need to do again is put a round of protection around the property line.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to do that.
That's a good idea.
Just go around the edge of my property line and
mm-hmm.
and clear it mm-hmm. and protect it.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I clear out the house a few times a year, but the property line, I'm lucky if I get it done once a year.
Yeah.
It's just not something I think about.
Yeah. And it needs to go on like that maintenance checklist.
Right.
That we should all have.
Clean gutters and mm-hmm. protect the property.
Change the air filter.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. So this week's Can't Resist Crystal is the one and only Serpentine, a.k.a. the Regenerator.
Ooh.
This amazing crystal is great for regeneration, luck, and healing. From one of my favorite sites, energymuse.com, the medicine of the snake is considered magical, especially among ancient healers who used the serpentine crystal stone as an antidote for deadly snake bites. In crystal healing, the serpentine crystal, meaning harnesses powerful healing energy that works to create an energetic and protective shield around the body. When you feel safe and guarded from proverbial snake bites, it gives you the freedom and security you need to glow with love and happiness. The serpentine meaning reminds us to shoot for the stars because everybody's inner child knows their true purpose in life. Even if your dreams have been buried by societal expectations and demands of adulthood, the serpentine crystal stone meaning serves as the catalyst to free you from the shackles of society and self-imposed limitations. An easy way to have constant access to its powerful healing vibes is by wearing serpentine jewelry. It combines a dazzling array of colors and the strongest stone for manifesting the inner strength needed to follow your dreams. Every time you glance at your jewelry, remember that your lucky charm always has your back, even if there are predators lurking in the grass ready to cast a shadow on your happy place. An effective way to channel the serpentine is through meditation, because when it comes to regenerative healing of the mind, body, spirit, crystals and peaceful contemplation is like peanut butter and jelly for the soul. When you sit quietly with the stone and give it a specific intention, the stone becomes much more than dazzling eye candy sitting on your shelf. It now holds a personal meaning that you can call on whenever you need its distinctive healing qualities. Trust the serpentine crystal to do its job because it's had your back since day one. When it comes to the health and happiness of your heart and soul, don't let a few snakes in the garden scare off your inner child. Embodying the fire element, the snake energy found in serpentine heals snake bites on a physiological and psychological level with the ancient wisdom of fighting fire with fire. The snake has known many moons and many bites, making it one of the strongest crystals in transforming negativity into a beautiful rebirth of the spirit. For more on serpentine and other crystals, make sure you check out energymuse.com or any site or book or resource that resonates with you. It's time to break out those paddles and shock the heart because it's All Things Creepy, Part 2. Take cover under your covers because it's time to walk the halls of the haunted hospitals once again. Marie Rose, what do you have up for us?
So let's go to Utah and talk about the Old Tool Hospital.
Uh-oh.
So in 1873, a gentleman named Samuel Lee constructed a home for his family for them to live. But by 1913, they moved out of the home, and the county turned the home over for elderly and special care supervision. So basically, the county took over this house, and it became known to the locals as the county poorhouse. And then not long after that, the locals decided that this would be a good place for a hospital. So it was the area's hospital for about 40 years. And then a new hospital in the area opened up, and then it was this, which became the Tool Army Depot. So after some adjustments were made to ensure that medical care could be provided, the hospital was then, you know, a little bit more attractive because in the old place, it didn't have individual restrooms, but, you know, it wasn't built for that. But so, and also it didn't have a morgue. So anyways, the local the mortuary had to pick up the bodies and so on and so forth. But there was also a cemetery next to the structure, which maybe it could have had something to do with hauntings. Who knows? So the Old Tool Hospital was the site of many hauntings and paranormal activity. There were actually two movies filmed at this site. The first was called The Fastest Indian, which was a true story about motorcycle legend Burt Monroe. And the second movie was The Stand by Stephen King. Which is considered to be a nonfiction story based on potential post-apocalyptic. I always have problems with that word. Mm-hmm. Apocalyptic events. So these movies brought some notoriety to this hospital, and which is, you know, now hailed as, you know, state of the art. Was back then. But that closed for business in about year 2000. It was shut down. But you can still, it was shut down as a hospital. But today it's used for two different purposes. One half serves as an area to like an old folks home, you know, care for the elderly. And the other half serves as Asylum 49. But what's Asylum 49? It's actually a haunted house, which is kind of cool. A man by the name of Kim Anderson created Asylum 49 as an attraction for the youth and the community for Halloween. He set it up to be a haunted house. He really doesn't believe in hauntings and stuff like that and the paranormal. However, he spent some time at the hospital, and did a lot of research, and he became a believer. So the Utah Ghost Organization actually contacted him and his wife, Rebecca. And in 2007, they conducted an investigation, a ghost investigation. So, I mean, and it, I mean, apparently their investigation just went off the charts. There were thousands of, you know, EVPs have been documented during the investigations. Pictures and videos have been identified to show shadows and apparitions, mists, orbs, and all kinds of other craziness. The owners of the place, they decided to let the public have access to the area so that they could do investigations. So about twice a month, from January to July, they open it up for investigations, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
A spiritual portal is said to exist in the old Toole Hospital. It said that a nurse named Maria guards the portal. The spiritual portal contains a very bright light in which the deceased are highly attracted to. The individuals that have died while being cared for in their old age often go towards this light, believing it's their portal to the peaceful afterlife. However, Maria is there to inform them on the other side that this is not the area that they should go, and a psychic medium has toured the facility and did her own investigation on Maria and this portal. It is said that a patient by the name of Wes also haunts the hospital. He passed away and seems a bit confused, but he had Alzheimer's when he died. And it's believed that this confusion carried over into his death. He is known to stay in the room that he was assigned to. And when the medium came to the hospital and tried to help him cross over, he couldn't do it. And what she discovered is that there's a dark entity that stays close to him. And it's a very dark entity. And they just came to the conclusion that this dark entity is keeping Wes here. He can't cross over. They're keeping him here for whatever reason, just because they're mean and bullies. Wow. And nasty. So there are several other spirits that are said to haunt the hospital. Their names are Richard, James, Ned, Peter, and even a little girl named Jessica, which I know how you love the little children ghosts.
I do. They're my favorite. They're good enough.
These spirits have made themselves known to visitors, employees, and the Utah Ghost Organization. These folks have heard voices, seen apparitions, and just experienced all kinds of events. These spirits have definitely let themselves be known to other people. Also, the original owner, Samuel Lee, it is said that he walks the floors of this hospital. And, I mean, he contributed many ways to the community. And so he's well known, well loved. And him and his son, Thomas, who is between, they say his spirit appears as, you know, between 6 and 8 years old. Both of them linger in this hospital. And they say Thomas, his son, is a very playful spirit and thoroughly enjoys people coming to the hospital. And he likes to play jokes on the guests.
Because who wouldn't?
what little 6 or 8 year old little boy wouldn't want that?
For real. That's crazy. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, so this is the first one I've seen where a ghost organization has actually gone in and confirmed ghosts, and where mediums have gone in and tried to help spirits move to the other side. And so it kind of explains why a lot of them are stuck there. There's something dark keeping them there. Or whatever. It's something to think about.
That's true.
It's sad when you think about it.
It is very sad.
You know, you got this poor guy, Wes, who died with Alzheimer's, you know, is in the afterlife, is still confused and scared. And now he's got asshole over here, keeping him here, not letting him cross over into the light.
Hmm. Not okay. Not okay. Let him go.
I know, right?
Set him free. Up next, we have, I hope I'm going to pronounce this correctly, and there are several out of the country, but up next, we have the Gangnam Psychiatric Hospital in South Korea. This is believed to be one of the most haunted spots in South Korea. It is an abandoned psych hospital, and it could, because of all the hauntings, be the basis for one of Stephen King's novels, with its pretty checkered past and all. According to local lore, patients here began dying mysterious deaths, one after the other, forcing the facility to shut down. Many people believe the murderous owner of the place was to blame, claiming he kept patients as hostages, only to flee to the States when families of the deceased demanded explanations. There are also rumors of doctors going insane, rivaling their patients in madness. And, you know, in all reality, the hospital closed due to sewage problems, but that doesn't mean that abused patients didn't drop like flies. Ray.
Right?
Not nice. If there's any truth to that, this doctor just doing what he wants or what he wanted and keeping patients, keeping them held hostage and doing whatever crazy experiments on them, that's just, Sir, I hope in the afterlife you are just haunted. Sir. Haunted.
So I've got one for New York. Yay. The Rolling Hills Asylum.
The Rolling Hills.
The Rolling Hills.
Sounds so
hills.
Majestic.
I know. It sounds so peaceful. Right?
However. Dun, dun, dun.
Right. So actually, it started out as the Genesee County Poor Farm in the early 1800s. And this is where they put the folks they didn't know what else to do with. Orphans and widows.
Widows.
And they lived along next to the mentally handicapped and the criminals. So they just stuck all kinds of people here whose families couldn't take care of them, which is sad. There were more than 1,700 documented deaths, with hundreds more that are undocumented and believed to be buried at the site. In the 50s, the poor farm was developed into the old country home and infirmary, and then it was transformed into a shopping center, a set of shops, and then later on it became an antique mall.
Of course it did.
Sure, so we went from asylum to a mall.
And an antique mall at that, which is energy on energy on energy.
Oh,
so,
right. With all the
way to go, guys.
Yeah, that was genius, wasn't it?
Yeah, super genius.
So in 2007, Susie Yentzer was working on a public ghost hunt at this site. The group sat in a circle in the basement and she began to speak. A glow stick, the only form of light in the room, on its own, began to sway back and forth. Then a rocking horse started moving on its own. Mm. And several people saw a hand suddenly appear and reach for the glow stick.
Ooh. Not the rocking horse.
The second floor corridor in the east wing is referred to as Shadow Hallway due to the high number of shadow figure sightings, which walks the hall and crawls across the floor. A 7-foot tall patient is also commonly spotted in this area where he spent most of his life.
Nope.
That creeps me out.
Not okay. We are going to Norway. We are making our way to Lear Psych House, or Psychus. So, about half an hour from Oslo, This asylum was opened in 1926 and today is considered one of the most haunted hotspots in the country. Despite its reputation and the fact that most of the place has been abandoned since 1985, parts of it still house psychiatric patients who share their space with ghosts, shadows, and odd noises. Between 1945 and 1974, the hospital was notorious for conducting experiments on its patients, especially the testing of new drugs that even the pharmaceutical industry was hesitant to try on humans. Not okay, guys. Not okay. I can see why those previous patients would want to haunt this place.
Yeah, it's right?
Not nice. Not nice. Don't do it. You guys, in case you're wondering, that's not a disembodied cat. That's an actual bodied cat that's in here making all kinds of noise.
Yeah, he's...
Is he hungry? Or is he just annoyed that we're not paying attention to him? Sans.
He's trying to tell us something. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
There's a ghost in the closet.
Oh, somebody fell in the well. I don't know. What is it, Lassie? Who knows? It could be just pay attention to me. So, but he's back to being healthy. So he's not
good.
He's not. I don't think he's a sick kitty anymore. So far so good. Okay, so let's talk about the next lunatic asylum. It's called the Athens Lunatic Asylum in Ohio. So this asylum opened in the 1870s, specializing in the treatment of mentally and criminally insane patients.
Ooh.
They who were forced to go there either by the court or by their families. The facility started out as calm and pleasant, as they always do, where the patients are supposed to be able to relax and get better. But as with all the other asylums, it became overcrowded. And then on comes the cruel practices. Electroshock, ice water baths, lobotomies. Again, just not a nice place to be anymore. So the story of Margaret Schilling, which takes place in December of 1978, on this cold day, Margaret, who was a patient at Athens Lunatic Asylum, was playing hide and seek with the nurses, who got distracted and they forgot about her.
What?
Guess when they found her?
When?
So she started playing hide and seek in December of 78.
Wait, if you had to say the month in the year, like, that's not okay.
They found her body in January of 1979.
So it was a few weeks.
December 78.
To January 79.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Today, the imprint of her body, her clothes, her hair, they're still clearly visible on the floor, even after decades and decades of trying to clean it off.
Wow.
Yeah. Her body must have just rotted straight into the floor.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The patients who died without any families have been buried there. And so it's obviously haunted to this day. And the gravestones don't even have names on them. They have numbers. So there's just a mass unknown, unrecorded graves at this place. Those who have explored the cemetery have reported a huge number of ghost sightings and unexplained screaming in the middle of the night.
Of course, because never in the day.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, hide and seek.
Next up, we have the Narrenturm, I think is what it is, in Vienna, Australia. Now, it's unclear what's worse, the very morbid history that took place in Vienna's Fool Tower, Europe's first insane asylum built in 1784, or its current use, the Anatomical Pathological Museum, which features more than 4,000 graphic, gruesome abnormalities, jars full of deformed fetuses, and sickening wax models of untreated STDs.
Ew.
Either way, there's enough nightmare fuel in this place to last you until next Halloween with all kinds of haunts. No. I think I'm good on that. I'm going to pass.
Yeah.
On that weird museum and all the creepiness that took place. Mm-mm. No, I don't have a lot to say on this place because it's a little creepy.
Okay. All right. So we'll move on to the Essex Mountains Sanatorium. This sanatorium began as the Newark City Home in the 1870s. And the facility was designed to serve as an orphanage as well as to reform misbehaved children. So after a devastating fire, the construction of two new buildings and the decline in the number of girls sent to the facility, this dedicated female facility was transformed into the Essex Mountain Sanatorium in the early 1900s to care for tuberculosis patients.
Mm.
We've heard this story before, haven't we?
Heck yeah.
So over the years, the hospital grew considerably to cater to the number of patients, and until it was no longer used in the 1970s. The vacant wards were used to take care of the overflow of mental patients from a nearby asylum before the sanatorium finally closed its doors in 1977. So since it closed, many people have chosen to explore the sanatorium for themselves, and some of the more popular experiences include hearing footsteps running down the halls, seeing wheelchairs moving on their own. That seems to be a common theme in haunted mm-hmm. hospitals.
Wheelchairs. Ugh.
Ghost-like faces appearing in the windows, feeling like someone's following you, and the voice of hearing voices shouting, "Get out." I hear you, I'm
Seems
out.
Seems polite enough.
They're warning you.
Yeah.
Get out.
That comes before the scratch.
Wow.
Is that it for yours?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was enough. I don't want more.
Yeah. We're yeah. Good. Then, and that, yeah, that closes out the Essex Mountain Sanitarium.
Good Lord. Well, then let's mosey on over to Penhurst Asylum, y'all. Yo.
Ooh, that's mm-hmm. a well-known one.
We're going to Pennsylvania.
That's that one's pretty well-known.
Mm-hmm. So asylums have long been known to be sites of unimaginable suffering and abuse, and Pennsylvania's Penhurst Asylum is no different. Previously known as the Eastern Pennsylvania State Institution for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic, it was opened on November 23, 1908. In its 79 years of operations, there were hundreds of allegations of abuse and neglect of patients, many of whom were mentally or physically disabled. But the activity didn't stop after its closure. Many paranormal investigation teams have spent time on the 1,400-acre property and have reported a plethora of activity, including apparitions, shadowy figures, odd temperatures, and moving objects. But there are still so many unanswered questions. According to paranormal researchers, Penhurst Asylum is one of the most haunted places in Pennsylvania, if not the United States. Ghost hunting has become a sort of cottage industry around the property, and there's even a Penhurst Paranormal Association. Their tagline is, "They lived here, died here, and are still here."
Oh.
I know. But before we get into the haunted stuff, we have to talk a little bit about the setting. Penhurst Asylum itself is a beautiful, sprawling campus of about 20 buildings. The older buildings are red brick with granite and terracotta trimmings, making them quite striking. The facility was built to be almost entirely self-sufficient, with a power plant, farmland, and other facilities on the property. For things that they could not provide for themselves, it was serviced by a private rail line that brought supplies from the outside world. Many of the buildings are connected by underground, fireproof tunnels to make moving patients around easier, like many similar facilities of the era. The buildings were designed with small rooms for 2 to 3 people, but within 4 years of its opening, Penhurst was already overcrowded due to pressure to admit immigrants, orphans, and criminals. Residents were classified with 3 categories: mental, which were imbecile or insane, physical, which were epileptic or healthy, and dental, which was good, poor, or treated. In 1913, the Pennsylvania legislature appointed a commission for the care of the feeble-minded, which stated that the disabled were unfit for citizenship and recommended a program of custodial care, meaning that Penhurst would become even more overcrowded. By the mid-60s, the asylum housed 2,791 people, 900 more than the facility could comfortably accommodate. Most of these patients were children, and despite the facility's label as a school, only 200 of the residents were in any kind of art, education, or recreational programs that could have helped improve their condition, though many were high-functioning enough to improve with such care. The facility had only 9 medical doctors and 11 teachers on staff, none of whom had special education training. So 9 medical doctors and 11 teachers for, what was it, 2,700 people?
That's not a good recipe.
Yes. Bullying was rampant and unpoliced, and it's thought that this was the real reason for many accidental deaths and suicides that occurred. In 1968, conditions at Pennhurst were finally revealed to the public on a 5-part TV news report by a local correspondent for NBC 10 named Bill Baldini. These segments were titled "Suffer the Little Children." This horrifying footage triggered public outcry, but it would still take almost a decade of legal actions against Pennhurst before the facility closed. The allegations that finally led to a lawsuit against Pennhurst Asylum were those of Terry Lee Halderman, who, upon a visit to her parents, was found to have unexplained bruises. Although the case was never expected to go very far, the courts would find that the conditions at Pennhurst were deplorable, violating the 14th Amendment. They also found that the institutions used cruel and unusual punishments, which violates both the 8th and 14th Amendments, as well as the Pennsylvania Mental Health and Retardation Act of 1966. In 1983, 9 employees were indicted on charges ranging from assaulting patients, some of whom were in wheelchairs, to arranging for patients to injure each other. All of these findings led to the district court's decision to close the facility. This was the first time this was ever done, based on a constitutional right to community services, and the case would become an important precedent known as the Pennhurst Doctrine. Shortly after its closure, the Department of Military Affairs acquired the upper campus and reopened it as the Southeastern Veterans Center. In 2001, the state began acknowledging its duties to maintain historic properties in relation to Pennhurst, and the Pennhurst Memorial and Preservation Alliance was formed to advocate for certain uses of the property. As of 2010, the administration building has been renovated and repurposed as the Pennhurst Asylum Haunted House. Despite controversy from locals and those previously affiliated with the asylum, the attraction has been successful. Timothy Smith, the president and CEO of the PPA, is the son of the property's current owner, and he believes that the high occurrence of paranormal activity at Pennhurst could make it very profitable. The official research team for Pennhurst Asylum is the Shore Paranormal Research Society, a team of trained specialists whose purpose is to discover truth behind claims of paranormal activity. According to Jim Ansbach, the SPR's founder and case manager, Pennhurst Asylum is a hotspot for the paranormal. They've conducted numerous large-scale investigations of the property, taking photos, video, and audio recordings in multiple undeveloped buildings, reporting numerous sightings, mainly in the Quaker building. In the Quaker building, numerous shadowy figures appear to manifest and dissipate at will. These include what appears to be a young girl with long dark hair and a large hunched figure with dangling arms. Items have been seen moving while no one is near them, even going so far as to be propelled across the basement at times. Investigators have reported physical interactions with spirits, such as shoving and scratching. These assaults would leave physical marks that could be seen even after leaving the property. There were also multiple electromagnetic frequency spikes recorded while in the building, despite there being no power currently supplied to it. One of the most well-documented occurrences at Pennhurst is electronic voice phenomena, EVP, which is recordings of voices that could not be heard at the time of recording. Voices can be heard saying things like, "Go away," "We're upset," and disturbingly, "I'll kill you." Screaming and crying can also be heard without the help of recordings. It appears that, despite the patients being gone, the sounds at Pennhurst remain. The Pennhurst Paranormal Association plans to open the former hospital for more ghost hunts in the future, with other popular institutions such as the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia and the Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Kentucky as business models. Timothy Smith expects Pennhurst Asylum to be an incredibly profitable property. Pennhurst Asylum has been a lot of things over the years: hospital, prison, veteran center, memorial, and now a haunted house attraction. But no matter who inhabits these cursed walls, the ghosts remain, and their stories will be told. Dun, dun, dun. That is rough, and that happens. I mean, it happens today. It's not obviously like super talked about for obvious reasons, because these institutions, these hospitals or whatnot, want funding, but I mean, that is nasty levels of abuse. And I will tell you what, I hope like none of our friends to the show ever do stuff like this, because I'm gonna tell you, karma is a mother.
Right.
Karma is gonna get you.
Right. Karma will get you.
Yes. It's not nice.
Those conditions are awful.
And it's just for entertainment. And that's it.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? Like pitting patients against each other to fight each other.
I mean, what is this? Like, you know, cage fight for patients? No.
Right.
No. People come to these facilities to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And they are subjected to the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm. But it comes down to politics, money, all kinds of stuff. I mean, how many places have we talked about that were overcrowded, like immediately?
And lack of funding.
Yeah,
and
so many.
And it just, you know, what starts off as good intentions mm-hmm. just morphs into something.
Yeah. Ugly. Society just needs a place to put all the stuff they don't want to look at.
You know, it's horrible.
It is horrible. It makes me so sad. So I can understand why there would be so much activity, so much paranormal activity, whether it's been verified or not.
Right.
Because I think there's energy everywhere. There's activity everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's definitely lingering negative energy in these places. I mean, yeah. How could there not be?
Right. And it seems like the negative energy definitely far outweighs the positive energy, because there's a lot of that imprint as well. I'm sure there is. I'm sure that there have been good times, just like, you know, likely the intentions were very good and positive initially.
Right.
And it just, I don't know if it's like change of hands or what happens, and it just, it's so sad.
Yeah, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, could it be, you know, knowing about places like this, you know, make you hesitant to visit a hospital or go to a hospital? I mean, really, when you're going to a hospital, yes, you're going there to heal, and you're praying that, you know, you're being put into the care of somebody who is trained and has your best intentions, and that you will get the care that you need, and that you get to go home.
Right, whether you're aware or not.
Right.
Because how about like the stories that have popped up, like I think it was a year or two ago, that girl at the facility, I think it was Arizona, she's been in a coma for like years, and she ended up pregnant, like she had a baby. So right. They're like, this doesn't add up.
Right.
Because this chick has been in a coma forever.
Right.
And so they were like getting samples from like all the employees there, the male employees, to see what. And I thought there was a match to one of the employees.
Yeah, one of the orderlies or something like that.
Yeah, and I don't remember how that story ended, but I was like, dude, you are like next level disgusting. Like,
oh yeah,
there's something so unhinged about your brain and your soul. Like, it's not even right.
Yeah. He needs to be locked up and.
Yeah, and that happens all the time, all the time. Like, we don't hear about that, and. It's just, it's terrible. It is terrible. Like, I remember watching, maybe it was like the second Kill Bill. I don't remember. And Uma Thurman's character is in a long-term care facility like that. She's been like in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff, orderlies or whoever, they're like, you know, having sex with her all the time, like raping her, because that's what it is. And I remember watching that and just being so disgusted. I'm like, this is, and it comes from somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Even like jokes have some fiber of truth. So these stories, like, they come from somewhere.
Right.
And I was just, I remember just being so grossed out.
It's sickening. It is absolutely sickening.
Yeah. Like, what a violation. So I feel that way about these patients, and I feel so bad for them. And I'm like, they either didn't have a say or just weren't listened to, you know, like. Drugged up, and you know, they do whatever they want with them, and it's just horrible. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry, all of you stuck spirits.
Yeah, you know, in hearing in some of these cases that mediums, you know, tried to help them cross over,
mm-hmm.
and they can't for whatever reason.
I know
that makes me sad, because there is happiness waiting for them on the other side, and they can't get to it.
Right, and the ones that are stuck in that constant loop, it's like you press play and rewind, or press play and rewind. You know what I mean? Like, right. They keep going through the same events over and over.
Yeah.
That's super sad, too. I'm like, dang. And I don't know which one is worse, like being stuck and knowing where you are, or not knowing and just being in this constant loop and you're like reliving this horror over and over and over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Either one's just sad. It's terrible.
All right. We have another one.
Okay, so let's hop over to West Virginia to the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Museum.
Yes,
so this place actually took nearly 20 years to build and is the second largest asylum in the world. It was originally designed to hold 250 patients before it reached its peak in the 50s to... like over 2,000 patients. And it's again, you know, it's the experimental treatments, neglect, and thousands of people, you know, dying there over the years. The building obviously, you know, just deteriorated over the years. And with the deterioration of the facility and changes in the treatment of mental illness, I mean, the asylum was finally closed in the mid-1990s. So the reason for being committed to the Trans-Allegheny Asylum included stupid stuff, such as falling from a horse, to laziness, to... female trouble. I mean, what the hell? You know, being deserted by husbands, you know, to more serious cases such as murder and you know, being honestly psychologically off.
Mm-hmm.
So all kinds of people were cooped up together here which is just a recipe for disaster. So since the asylum closed, the staff who work there, they say that ghosts now roam the halls. The manager stated that she once saw 40 doors slam at the same time.
Just a light breeze.
Right? While other visitors witnessed... again, here we go with the children ghosts. A little boy standing in the corner of the room, which is scary. Again, ghost sightings, whispers of patients who have been forgotten, and then unusual smells and sound of squeaking gurneys and screams from electroshock. So this just all kinds of craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this place is actually still open, but they're not functioning as a lunatic asylum. This place is now open for tours. So from March to November, you can go get a tour of this place. It's a National Historic site now, and... It's also been called the Weston State Hospital. It's located in Weston, West Virginia. And this place, I mean, it has stories from the Civil War and a lot of history here. But it's famous for the hauntings. So there's two types of tours that you can get here. Either a historic tour or the haunted tour. And again, every year from the end of March to mid-September, you can go take tours of this massive building.
Mm-mm. That's cool.
Yeah. So if you're a historian, yeah, you can go tour it for those reasons, or you can go do the ghost tours.
Nice.
If you're so inclined.
We'll see. All right, so we have some stories for you guys to close out the night. The first one is not so much a ghost story, it's more of a creepy story. You be the judge. I had cared for an elderly woman with no family who came to us when her husband died. She didn't speak often, but when she did, it was usually just words that made no sense. I felt so bad for her because ever since she had arrived, so many of the residents in her area that she seemed to enjoy spending time with had passed in such a short time span. She put up a picture of each of them next to her pictures of her husband and several others who were probably family to remember them. I had always felt sorry for her and showed her extra attention, and we became close. It just seemed so unfair that she had such luck and kept losing people that she cared about. One day she looked at me and said, plain as day, sweetie, I think I'm done now, and handed me a picture. It was a picture of me, and I smiled because it touched my heart that I was that important to her. She passed nearly a week later and I cried for days. It hit me really hard. She knew it was the end for her and she had said goodbye as best she could. A little less than 2 years later, I was talking with a colleague and she came up in conversation. My colleague referred to her as that crazy bitch, which seemed very out of character for her, and it shocked and offended me deeply. I expressed this to her not so nicely and she looked at me with this shocked look and said, oh, you don't know? And then explained something to me that I had not known. As it turned out, it came out sometime after she had passed that she had killed her husband by poisoning him, and that there was an investigation because it appeared that she had a ritual of befriending someone, obtaining a picture of them, and hiding the picture until she could kill them, usually by poisoning, and then displaying the picture as a sort of trophy. It was suspected that this may have been the reason for the spike in mortality rate during her stay and the considerable number of photos in her collection. The last I heard, the old family photos were in any relation to her, and the police were trying to ID the individuals and compare them to several cold cases.
Now that's a movie in the making.
Right?
Ooh. And she survived.
Ma'am, stop.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. definitely a movie in the making.
Mm-hmm.
At least an HBO special.
At least a Lifetime movie, because something.
Right?
Right? Goodness. All right, here's another one. I work in a level one trauma center receiving for 11 counties, which is to imply a fair amount of carnage routinely. One morning between 3 and 4 a.m., I was alone in the bay. We have four trauma bays and two resuscitation rooms in a rectangle surrounding a nursing station, catching up on documentation. I became aware of a man walking from behind me on my right side, outside the nursing station and into one of the trauma rooms, except I hadn't heard any doors open, big, noisy, motion-activated doors. He looked at me over his shoulder as he walked through the room doors, but didn't answer when I called out, hello? I walked around, losing sight of the bay door as I rounded a big column to make sure it wasn't a lost visitor, and there was no one there. There's no way out other than the door, and it was out of my line of sight for maybe a second max. I later relayed the story and heebie-jeebies I felt while I was looking for the stranger to another nurse. She said she'd had an identical experience that same week. People bring it up from time to time. Same story. Guy walks into the room and then is gone by the time you go look for him. We've decided to just leave him alone. I hope he finds what he's looking for, though. Dun, dun, dun.
Aw.
I know. So he seems to be in that loop. Just coming, going, coming, going. Maybe he passed away there.
Could be.
Or close by. I don't know. Or he's visiting his ghost girlfriend. We don't know. They meet up every night in trauma room 4.
Talk about a loop.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Like most very old hospitals, at one time our hospital was run by nuns. One particular unit had been converted into a sleep study lab for outpatient tests. One shift in the middle of the night, I was watching the video monitor and 5 patients simultaneously began removing their monitoring equipment. I went into the first room to ask what was going on, and the patient said that the old nurse with the cap told her the study was over and that she should leave. After walking into all of the rooms, all the patients reported the same story.
And let me guess, there was no old...
There was no
nurse.
So this nurse was watching the cameras, the video monitor, of all of the patients that were doing their testing, and she saw nothing.
Ooh.
I know. But they all reported the lady with the cap.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
I don't like it.
Wow.
I know. That ruined that study, didn't it?
I know. Way to go, ma'am. All right. I work in a cardiovascular surgical ICU. We have a lot of effed up people, both physically and mentally, that come through our unit. We had a stretch of nights where each corner room of our unit, it's a perfect square, reported seeing a cat walking around. Not a friendly cat either, apparently. The thing was hissing at people. The accounts were so similar to each other, we actually spent probably half an hour looking around for a cat and then had security slash plan ops come look as well.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
No cat was ever seen or found. However, two of those four patients coded the next day.
Okay, that's not funny.
Right? The Grim Reaper has taken on a new form? A hissing cat?
A hissing cat.
A hissing cat. Ooh. Meow. It's not okay, cat. It's not okay.
He was trying to warn them.
Was he, or did he come for their souls like cats do? Was it Cat's Eye, the Stephen King movie? Do you remember that? You probably didn't see that. Damn it, Marie Rose.
Is that the one with the gremlin?
It was like several stories.
Yeah. Was there a little gremlin?
I think so.
Yeah. I remember that one. The cat was the good guy in that story.
The cat was a good guy.
Yeah.
I think that was the little kid Drew Barrymore.
And the little gremlin was the...
It used to like come out of the wall or something? Or,
yeah, and he got killed by... Because the cat swatted him into the fan at the end.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Cat's Eye, guys. Yeah, if you're a real scary movie fan.
The cat was the good guy.
Yeah, the cat was the good guy.
Yeah.
And didn't they think, like the parents or somebody thought the cat was the bad one because cats steal your breath?
Right. And it was the gremlin stealing the breath. Little
that's right
evil troll little
I am
thing.
So impressed by you right now. I can't even.
Well, when things horrify you, it gets burned in your brain.
Not the cat.
Yeah, the cat's the good guy.
Yeah,
don't
we should look that up.
Kitty.
I think it was little kid Drew Barrymore.
It might have been. It might have been.
Yeah. All right, here's our last story to close out the night, you guys. I was working a night shift job as an aide caring for a lady with terminal cancer on hospice at home, as I have for years. She was starting to slip and I woke her family, two girls, and her husband. We were all sitting around. She was pretty quiet and peaceful. All of a sudden, she looked toward the door and said, "Rex? Rex, you're here for me. I'm ready and they won't let me go." I saw a shadowy figure come into the room and felt the creepiest evil spirit. I'm not normally spooked, but I was so glad when it was time for me to go home. I turned to watch this spirit and the family was looking at me like, "What are you looking at?" The lady died later that day. A few months later, her daughter had been sick, just not well, not terminal, and they called my agency to see if I could come and stay with her at night for a few days until she was a little stronger. I stayed two nights. All kinds of weird paranormal stuff in that house. Voices in rooms that were empty, sounds of people moving around when everyone was asleep, etc. I decided I didn't care how sick she was or how much the family liked me. I was not doing another shift there.
Oh my goodness, poor thing.
Very, very wise. I can't do it.
You know, and so she sensed something coming in the room. She sensed that it was evil.
Mm-hmm.
And
as she's looking at it, the family's like, "What the hell are you looking at?"
And it's like, "Okay, don't you want to say something?" It's like, "Okay, there's something and it's not good and we need to get somebody in here.
Pronto."
Right, because... It's not like the story went the other way where somebody was about to pass and a pleasant energy came into the room to help her cross over. No, and quite the opposite.
Well, maybe Rex was mega evil in the living plane. And then when he crossed over, he remained mega evil.
Right. So he needs to not be there with this person who is about to die.
Well, maybe like she was all about it and she's like, "Rex." Because, I mean, she was welcoming him.
You think she was evil?
Maybe.
You think she was a bad girl?
I mean, she could have been. Or when she said, "They won't let me go," was she referring to that negative energy?
Or she had angels protecting her, not letting her go to that negative energy.
Maybe. So maybe it was Rex and another energy, and this nurse just didn't see Rex, but she could see the dark one. And the lady was like, "Rex, what's up? I'm ready, but..."
But the negative energy is keeping me here.
Mm-hmm.
We see how good we are at making up
We're
scenarios.
Really no, we just solved the case. We should call her.
Yeah.
And commend her for not going back to work. Because something's up in that house.
Right.
Avi. Mm-mm. Friends, that's our episode on Haunted Hospitals Part 2. We really hope you guys enjoyed this creepy content as much as we did. Thank you again for joining us for another Can't Miss episode and tuning in week after week. We love you guys oh so much. Don't forget to hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters and on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, where I will show you even more love. Feeling spooky? Send your real-life ghost stories to themediamatters@gmail.com, via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or leave your ghost story on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118. And remember, your voicemail will be played on the air, so make sure you tell me in your message if you'd prefer to keep it private. Do you want the VIP treatment all the live long day? Join our kick-ass Patreon family for as little as $1 per month and get immediate access to all the goods. Check us out at patreon.com/themediamatters and join the fun right now. If you're liking the show, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review this and other podcasts that you're loving. Your ratings and reviews help support the show and makes it easier for others to find your faves. With that, you guys, it is a wrap. We're back next week with an all-new episode of The Media Matters. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, may your days be supernatural and extraordinary. Good night, you guys.
Yes, good night. And thank you for putting up with Sandy the cat.
He's delicious.
He's a good boy. Thank you, everybody.
Good night, you guys.